When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I want to start this conversation out with something that happened on Tucker Carlson's show. Paul Ryan, Speaker Ryan, thought he was in safe territory, and it didn't probably go the way that he'd hoped it would go.
Okay, so let's get to the tax policy. So as I understand it, and I'm just reading this, so I may have it wrong, but there's an investment tax in here, the net investment income tax. And as far as I know, it only kicks in on couples making over $250,000 a year. So it's a tax on wealthy investors, and you're eliminating it. In a
yeah, 3.8% tax. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So I guess my question is, looking at the last election, was the message of that election really, we need to help investors? I mean, the Dow is over 20,000. Are they really the group that needs the help?
This was a tax on capital income, which is bad for economic growth. It's basically a capital gains tax increase, effectively, to finance Obamacare. We're undoing Obamacare, so we're not going to keep Obamacare taxes in place. So all of these taxes, a $1 trillion tax cut that this bill represents, that is part of that $1 trillion tax increase that was in Obamacare to finance Obamacare.
No, I know, but
we're repealing. No, but we promised we would repeal the Obamacare taxes. This is one of the Obamacare taxes, so we're keeping our promise. And by the way, it's bad tax policy because it's bad for economic growth, and we're also repealing the Obamacare spending. So we're getting rid of its taxing, and we're getting rid of its spending, and this is us keeping our word. You may want to keep that 3.8% tax. We're not going to keep it because it was part of Obamacare.
Well, but lots of things are part of Obamacare that you just said a minute ago you're not doing anything about because you can't under
only
reconciliation.
Because of reconciliation.
You don't have to meet, that's right, but you just said that you don't have to meet every promise in this first round.
That's
and
right.
Yet, I guess it's a macro
fiscal
question.
Policy we can be, but tax and spending policy
okay,
we can, so that's
I'm aware.
What we're doing.
But also, I mean, you have the overview here is that all the wealth basically in the last 10 years is stuck to the top end. That's one of the reasons we've had all this political turmoil, as you know. And so kind of a hard sell to say, yeah, we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to send more money to the people who've already gotten the richest over the last 10 years. I mean, that's what this does, no? I'm not a leftist. It's just that's true.
I'm not that concerned about it because we said we were going to repeal all the Obamacare taxes. This is one of the Obamacare taxes. The other point I'd say is
okay.
This dramatically helps us toward tax reform. I know it gets a little wonky. But by getting rid of the Obamacare taxes, the next bill up coming up this spring and summer is tax reform. And that means the new tax code that we're proposing, we put this in our Better Way plan too. It's a part of our blueprint. Go online and read that as well. That will not have to overcome those Obamacare taxes. Meaning, when we have a new replacement tax code to gut and replace this tax code, it won't have to also replace the Obamacare taxes. So
right.
By getting rid of all these taxes, we're lowering the revenue that is taken out of the American economy, out of families, out of businesses for the government. And we think that's really important.
There you go.
I don't want to get too wonky here.
See, he thought he was in safe refuge. He wasn't expecting that.
Nobody ever expects the guy with a bow tie to go pop.
Right.
Not allowed. But I like Ryan's theory there, okay? Because his theory is that if you top off the tank now, when you're filling the tank in the future, you won't have to do that.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're going to get rid of these taxes now, and that'll make it easier when we do tax reform in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, why is that the case?
Well, and why is a tax on capital gains bad for the economy? The only time you have to pay capital gains is when you're taking money out of the economy.
Right, and also when you're making, you know, hand over fist money. You know, the absurdity of it is that Tucker Carlson, who I'm not always purely for, but he's zeroed in on exactly the right stuff, okay? Because whether Ryan gets his plan, and by the way, he will not get this plan. This is already, I think it's over, don't you? I mean,
he's holding firm today.
Yeah, it's a disaster, though. And, I mean, it's the likelihood this thing comes through the House and the Senate gets signed by Donald Trump is about sub-zero. But the interesting thing is he might get some things. And you could end up in a situation where let's say they do the Obamacare repeal and replace light, okay? Where they don't do all the things they say they're going to do. In fact, they do very few of them. They keep a lot of Obamacare because it's increasingly popular now, polling, you know, higher than it ever has, you know, throughout from the start of the thing. But they do get rid of some of these taxes and some of these revenue sources. Then you end up with, I think, what they really want, which is a broke Obamacare, right? Not enough resources, not enough money coming in, but still the infrastructure of the plan. And then when it's broke and not functioning, when it becomes a disaster, that's the point at which you say, oh, well, I guess we have to replace it.
John Nichols from the Capital Times with us at sliceoffice.com. Here is Paul. Here's another clip of Paul Ryan.
So take a look at this chart. The red slice here are what I would call people with pre-existing conditions, people who have real health care problems. The blue is the rest of the people in the individual market. That's the market where people don't get health insurance at their jobs, where they buy it themselves. The whole idea of Obamacare is the people on the blue side pay for the people on the red side. The people who are healthy pay for the people who are sick. It's not working, and that's why it's in a death spiral.
Isn't that how insurance is supposed to work?
That was an astounding moment, even in the scheme of things, because he did it so straight. I mean, I know that some people are cynical about Paul Ryan and think, you know, he would just lie straight out. But you can't lie with that. I mean, he was like the chipper student presenting his report. You know, he was so excited to be able to make a point, you know, like a coherent point, which he rarely does. And but his coherent point was that the way that we have always done insurance throughout history, the only way that insurance can ever work, right? Because if it was all sick people, the likelihood that it was going to function is pretty slim. The only way that you possibly do insurance is to have healthy folks chipping in on the assumption that they may themselves someday be unhealthy, and so it all works as an ongoing process. It seemed to me, Sly, that he wasn't lying there. That he really does not understand the concept of insurance, which is far more terrifying than a liar. I mean, I just want to emphasize, somebody who lies about this stuff, or a grifter, a cheat, a bad player, that's one thing. But somebody who actually doesn't know what they're destroying or trying to destroy, that's horrifying.
All right. As long as we're playing Paul Ryan clips, let's get your reaction to this one.
One thing I'm certain will happen is CBO will say, well, gosh, not as many people will get coverage. You know why? Because this isn't a government mandate. This is not the government makes you buy what we say you should buy, and therefore the government thinks you're all going to buy it. So there's no way you can compete with, on paper, a government mandate with coverage. What we are trying to achieve here is bringing down the cost of care, bringing down the cost of insurance, not through government mandates and monopolies, but by having more choice and competition. And by lowering the cost of health care, you improve the access to health care. And by having the things that we're talking about, tax credits, risk pools, health savings accounts, you dramatically increase the access to health care. But we're not going to make an American do what they don't want to do. You get it if you want it. That's freedom.
Freedom.
Can't make an American do what they don't want to do, Sly. Huh? That's why we have never had a draft.
I like that line. That's a good line.
Can I try another one?
Uh-huh.
Can't make an American do what he doesn't want to do. That's why we pay no taxes. You want me to keep going?
Well, I'm sure the congressman feels that women should have the right to choose whether they terminate a pregnancy, right?
You can't make people do what they don't want to do, right? So,
freedom.
I mean, it's like it's what you call a freedom. But you see, the worst part about Paul Ryan in a moment like that is that he's learned this list of things, all of which are really, really not good ideas. Just in the overall scheme of things, where he like goes down the list and he's got the, you know, pools and self savings accounts and you know, he runs down the system, you think like, well, you know, something in there might work, right? Like maybe there's some plan here, there's some theory. And it is true that pools, you know, high-risk pools, things like that, they can be useful, and even health savings accounts, some people have had them and they function. But the idea that you're going to provide adequate, complete health care for a nation of 340, 350 million people as we move forward here, with, you know, this gobbledygook of little gimmick plans, and that's what those are gimmicks, right, is 100%, 1,000% absurd. It will not work. And unless you have some reality, some great, big, strong reality organizing this, and it can be the private sector. I don't think the private sector does a good job of it. I think they've done a lousy job. They've left, you know, tens of millions of people uncovered. But still, you've got to have something, some there that, you know, has as its core concept providing a lot of care to a lot of people. And running down a list of, you know, footnotes, and that's what he did there. He ran down a list of, you know, all these little gimmicks that he thinks is somehow going to cobble together a health plan. That's absurd. That's the reality is what the Trump White House recognized, that 26 million people will lose their health care. Or what the CBO ultimately recognized is that, you know, over time, something like 24 million people will lose their health care. That's the reality of what we're talking about. Tens of millions of people without health care, many of whom are not, you know, young, healthy folks. But as we know from looking at the analyses of this plan, people in their 50s, early 60s who fall between the cracks and who would be faced with insurance bills under Paul Ryan's plan that literally, in some cases, would ask them to pay more than they earn just for insurance. This is the cruelest plan possible. I mean, it really is.
Well, let me put a human face on this. I don't know if you watched Senator Sanders in West Virginia last night.
Yeah,
here's a woman whose husband has black lung. Her name is Judy, and she explains what will happen to people with black lung in West Virginia.
Okay, with the black lung before the Affordable Care Act, you know, President Nixon signed that the coal miners would be compensated for the health because their life is going to be shortened by the black lung, and it does come from the occupation. President Reagan then made it so hard for the miner to prove he had black lung. It just could not even be done, hardly. So then our Senator Byrd was wheeled out on the Senate floor in a wheelchair when they were passing the Affordable Care Act, and he got it that if a miner had worked 15 years in the mines, the burden of proof would go to the company to prove he didn't have the black lung, instead of the miner having to prove it. Also, when the miner would die, the spouse had to reprove it. Senator Byrd got that part removed. Huh. But this is all going to die with the Affordable Care Act.
I just want to be clear. If they pass this bill right now, if they repeal the Affordable Care Act, the expanded eligibility for folks with black lung, for all the folks in this county and the neighboring counties and all throughout West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Tennessee that mine coal for years, it will go back to being much, much harder for those folks to access benefits from the government. Is that right?
Yes, and also we have these rural health clinics that treat these miners with this black lung disease. And, you know, it's very needed. That is mostly funded by the Affordable Care Act.
Well, there's quite a picture for you.
I'd give that woman a TV show. She knows the material and delivers it well. She's right about everything that she said there. And, you know, the horrible back and forth over protections going back to the Nixon era. And she is exactly right. You know, at the very end of his life, Robert Byrd, who really was, in my opinion, you know, like, certainly he was a flawed guy. I mean, his youth was in some cases wasted on on some really ugly politics. But as he got older, he took on a sort of a moral duty for particularly the miners of West Virginia. And that is true, that they got some protections into the Affordable Care Act that cleaned up decades of disregard and disrespect for people who work some of the toughest and most dangerous jobs that we have. And it is beyond my comprehension that anyone from West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, Southern Ohio, or from out in the Western coal regions in you know, parts of Colorado and even into Wyoming, would vote for this. And in fact, I don't think they will. I think at the Senate level, I can tell you right now. That's why I'm very comfortable saying that this whatever reform, whatever they want to call it, deform that they've proposed, that Paul Ryan wants, is dead on arrival. It will not happen. Because I think the political blowback in a state like West Virginia, if you were a Republican that voted for that, would be pretty rough.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SliesOffice.com. Let me ask you, if you saw any of that town hall meeting last night, I was struck by how similar people are across this country when you hear them talking. And how, you know, West Virginia used to be a Democratic state, and as the coal industry fell apart, and especially during the Al Gore ascent in politics and global warming, Democrats peeled off in that state. But if you listen to the people talking there, they're not that different than we are. They're pretty progressive, actually. They think we should all be covered with health care.
Well, I as a progressive, I like you associating the term with progressive movement. I believe that's biblical.
I sent you my speech that I gave at the Labor Temple the other day in Janesville.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to watch it, I do reference Pope Francis, and I don't think Pope Francis would be all that impressed with Paul Ryan's block grants.
Did you see Bobby Kennedy's grandson? I think it's Bobby Kennedy's grandson, right? The kid, the congressman from Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Redheaded guy? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where he just took this thing apart took Ryan apart from a biblical standpoint. It was like a stunning moment. And I guess maybe one Catholic to another or something like that, but it was an incredibly powerful, in fact, I would even go so far as to say beautiful, referencing of biblical tradition and doctrine for the best of purposes, literally saying, you know, you don't take people's health care. When I was sick, I did not comfort you.
Here is Katie Turr last night giving some more info about the CBO score.
Mentioned this pullout from the CBO under Obamacare, a 64-year-old making $26,500 would pay $1,700 in 2026. Under the GOP plan, this is according to the CBO, the same person, a 64-year-old making $26,500, would pay $14,600. That is more than half of that person's income.
Wow.
That's what I was talking about before. I mean, every evidence is that this Paul Ryan plan, let's be clear. The Paul Ryan plan, which, by the way, Trump is going to abandon in very short order. Paul Ryan plan is morally flawed. Okay? It does not treat health care as the right that it is. It is economically flawed. There's no way that it balances out in any kind of logical way and continues to meet the promises that have been made by Ryan and Price. But, and here's the final thing, it's politically flawed. It is politically flawed. Who votes in America, Sly?
Old people.
Yeah. And what was Trump, especially for Trump, what was his big kind of gold mine voting block? It was 50 to 65-year-olds. You got a disproportionately Republican vote out of that group of people. Bernie Sanders got a disproportionately pro-Sanders vote out of people under the age of 30. I mean, but for Trump, his people were the 50 to 65-year-olds. this plan attacks them. It's a brutal assault on them. And here's the interesting thing, Clay. You know, it's easy to fall into traps here. If somebody's making $26,500 a year, obviously if you take $14,000 out of it, you know, it's just not going to happen, right? That's an absurdity. No matter how sick they are, no matter what's going on, to take more than half of what they got, that's not going to function. But truthfully, that initial number she used, $1,700, $1,800 to get health care. If you're making $26,000 a year and you're trying to get by, especially if you have, you know, maybe a spouse and a child, maybe a kid who's, you know, trying to go to college, something like that. You can't give up that $1,700.
That's right.
$1,700 is too much. So
Your dog just concurred.
He's always on board for these important messages, let me just tell you. But it's an important thing to understand because we skew and warp this debate in really, really bad ways. We allow ourselves to imagine that somebody making $26,000 a year can afford to take, you know, 5%, 8% of their income at that rate when you're making that money, and that's not going to be a burden for you. And if you've got pre-existing conditions, sick family, stuff like that, you know, I mean, even if you were to reduce down what Ryan Care proposes here, it's still overly burdensome, and it doesn't have to be that way. We can create in this country, we already have created in this country, a health care system with Medicare and to a lesser extent with Medicaid that shows that you can provide massive amounts of quality care to people without ruining them, without taking disproportionate amounts of their money from them. And yet we refuse to do it. For some of our most vulnerable people, it is, I mean, it's not even casually. I just want to emphasize, it's not debatable that this is a moral issue and that people who fall on the wrong side of this and say that it will be dealt with by the market are taking a stand on this that I believe abandons their own morality. They know this is wrong. And yet, for some reason, a campaign contributor or some, you know, ridiculous idea, maybe something they read in an Ayn Rand book or something like that, causes them to go against what they know to be right and wrong, or know to be right.
I want to ask you about the purging of these U.S. attorneys. Now, obviously, whenever a new administration comes in, eventually they get new U.S. attorneys. It is a politically appointed position. Here is Sean Hannity the other night, hours before Donald Trump pulled the trigger.
For weeks, we've been warning you about the deep state Obama holdover government bureaucrats who are hell-bent on destroying this president, President Trump. Tonight, it's time for the Trump administration to begin to purge these saboteurs before it's too late.
Before it's too late. You know, the last time I heard...
Wait, you remember that slogan?
That was Bernard Epton's slogan when running for mayor of Chicago against Harold Washington.
Yeah, and some people thought that wasn't exactly a positive message.
No.
But I like the, purge, too. You know, I mean, this whole thing and the whole deep state thing, which, you know, by the way, I mean, I like it when we introduce new terms to the discourse. It's always fun. But if you think that U.S. attorneys are the deep state, you're Sean Hannity.
That is correct. So what do you make of this whole Preet Bharara situation and what's going on with the U.S. attorneys?
Well, we all want to know what Trump tried to call him and talk to him about. That's the interesting thing, right? Because apparently we understand that on the day before, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, who's a really major player, before he was essentially fired, there was a call from Trump's office. He did not take the call because, as a U.S. attorney, you're not supposed to do that. In fact, he did everything right. Call came, he didn't take it, and then he notified folks that he had been called, apparently by the president's office. So we don't know what Trump wanted to say, whether Trump wanted to try and negotiate a deal, because This guy really is a very well-regarded and well-respected U.S. attorney. Or whether Trump was calling him personally to say he's going to fire him, I don't know. You know, maybe that's honorable. Trump at least says it to your face, or at least over the phone. But there's a lot of there's a lot to be examined. And do you remember, Sly? You're probably the only person who does. Remember back in the Clinton era when we had some of this? Maybe the Clinton-Bush era, where some U.S. attorneys were being fired and people were making a huge deal about it.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's what we know. We know that U.S. attorneys are often replaced. We know that that's a bad thing. That's not really how it's supposed to work. That, you know, you should be filling these positions not with political appointees, but with, you know, quality lawyers, people that really can do the job. I think this kind of mass firing does require a serious examination, because it looks to me like Trump is doing it, you know, not just to clean house, but because quite a few of these people were working on cases that are of immense consequence, either to Trump or to people close to him. And I think it's worthy of taking a look. I'm not saying necessarily that we've got corruption here, that we've got some big scandal. I think, though, that particularly what that U.S. attorney in New York was working on as regards Rupert Murdoch, who is a very essential player for Donald Trump, it's worthy of asking some tough questions and trying to get to the bottom of it, you know, getting more than what we've got. Unfortunately, as somebody very wise pointed out the other day, it was a Republican political operative who's not a big fan of Trump's, said, you know, the problem that we've got at this point is that such massive things, firing dozens of U.S. attorneys, you know, a Muslim ban, you know, accusing the former president of the United States, your predecessor, of, you know, massively violating the law by wiretapping and walking it back and then walking back the walk back. You know, these so many things are coming on a daily basis that I have a feeling, you know, I would probably bet on that this U.S. attorney thing kind of gets lost in the mix, but it should, because it goes at a core rule of law issues.
So we really are at an interesting situation with the Justice Department, and I just have a couple minutes here. Justice Department is now asking for another delay about trying to hold off on, to basically give the answer on whether Donald Trump's phone was tapped by Barack Obama.
Yeah, I mean,
how long is this going to take?
Well, I mean, everybody who should know has said it didn't happen. Okay, the question is whether Jeff Sessions is playing a game with this, or whether he's really examining it. Is Jeff Sessions effectively slow walking this in order to let the time pass and this be forgotten? If he is, that's an impeachable offense, without a question. He is using his position in order to protect the president of the United States, his friend, ally, the person nominated for president, from being called out on a lie. To use the Department of Justice in that way is a massive, serious abuse. Won't be treated as such, because most people in Washington, most pundits, most political elites don't understand what a terrible thing that is. If you know that no crime was committed and you don't reveal that as soon as you know, if you know that Donald Trump was wrong and you somehow claim, well, I'm going to look at some more files or something like that, that's an abuse of justice. It's an abuse of the law in the most fundamental way. And Jeff Sessions, you know, there are a few people who have ever gotten near the Attorney General's office who have a longer record of abusing the law and using it in inappropriate ways. This guy has been called out and rejected as a judge and thrown out of court over the years for ridiculously and absurdly and troublingly abusive practices. And so I think we have to have a little skepticism as regards Sessions. And frankly, if he's doing it, as I said before, I think this guy should be impeached, should be removed from office on about 100 different charges, but this would be just one more.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Total pleasure.
Sly's Office.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.